Okay, so let's get going. So good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. This is the ALAC meeting for the final review of the revised rules of procedures on the 19th of March, 2013. The time is 20:08 UTC, and we have a nice number of people who are on the call. Great to see you all. I'm not going to just speak forever. I think the best thing is to just start with a roll call, and then I'll pass the hand over to Cheryl Langdonor and to Alan Greenberg. So Gisela, if you could please start with a roll call.
Thank you, Olivier. Gisela here. On the English channel, we have Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, Ron Sherwood, Alan Greenberg, Cheryl Langdonor, Gordon Chilcott, Roberto Gaetano, Alan Skuse, Garth Broom, Jordi Ipaguir, Tijani Benjema, Eduardo Diaz, and Sandra Hulkerichter. We don't have anyone currently on the French channel. And on the Spanish channel, we have Jose Arce, Natalia Enciso, and Aida Noblia. Apologies noted from Holly Raich, Renalia Abdul-Rahim, and Salanieta Tamanikai Waimaro. Also, Evan Leibovich has also just joined the call. On our Spanish channel, as interpreters, we have Veronica and David. And on the French channel, we have Claire and Camilla. And if I could also please remind you all to state your names when speaking for transcript purposes, and also to allow the interpreters to identify you on the other language channel, and to speak at a reasonable speed, as you will be discussing a document, and if you do read anything, please remember that it is being interpreted. I hope I haven't left anyone off the attendance list. If I have, please speak up now. And if not, over to you, Olivier. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gisela. It's Olivier for the transcript, and I'll make this quick and pass the baton over directly to Cheryl and to Alan. You have the floor.
Thank you very much. It's Cheryl Langdonor for the transcript report, and interestingly enough, I think I can still hear an echo from my line, so I'm not sure how disturbing it's going to be for everyone else. If there's an issue for the interpreters, please do let me know. With that said, I will therefore try and minimise my verbal interventions for today's call and give you a very brief introduction before I'll therefore hand over to Alan to take us through the proposed ALAC rules of procedure, a draft version before, and yes, that is not a typo. 64 versions, and they're substantive change versions have been worked on by your workgroup. Your workgroup ALAC, if you would care to note, for the purpose of this call and for the record, was a regionally balanced and diverse group which included ALAC member representation from all of your regions and regional leadership and individual ALS members from all of your regions. They have logged, and I do mean literally logged, more than 500 man or person hours, as I would prefer it to be called, on these pieces of rule change and review. There is an untold amount of additional work that was not logged in formal meetings done by the holders, and in particular by a couple of your ALAC members who took significant lead in the process. And here I would like to specifically call out and go down on virtual bended knee to thank Alan Greenberg, who's done nothing short of a heroic amount of work, particularly in the final phase of getting these documentations ready for your review and, we trust, adoption. Any comments that have come into the wiki page that we are aware of, unless they've come in the last few moments, have been nothing but supportive and complimentary. But there is and was a call for any regional input and opinion to be brought to this meeting and to be shared via the ALAC representatives from any given region. And one thing we would like to do is ask I think up front, Alan, if that suits you, if there is any such opinion or comment that needs to be tabled at this time. So if anyone has brought with them for tabling at this meeting a particular comment or editorial suggestion or question from their regions and ALSs, could they please make that known now?
Right.
I'm not sure who that is, so please go ahead. I believe I heard a yes. This is Cheryl Langdonore. Is there someone wishing to table a comment or raise a question on behalf of their regions or ALSs? That may have been an errant noise then. Please make it known in the chat room if, in fact, you do wish to raise a point. Okay, I believe at the moment everyone should be able to have individual thinking of their documents, individual scrolling of the documents. Can everyone check to see that they are able to scroll through the Rules of Procedure version 64 pages? Okay, if scrolling is okay, then what I'm going to do now, because there is a little echo on the line, is hand over to Alan Greenberg, and he will take us through the high points and highlights of this documentation. He will also make particular point of a single piece of substantive addition, which will be some proposed text to slide in into paragraph 11.2 as a new item, 11.2.2. Over to you, and thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Cheryl. A little bit about the history and process that we've gone through. It was in the cover note that announced this meeting, but I'm going to repeat it now because I think it's worthy of making sure everyone understands it. The Rules of Procedure Working Group very quickly divided into four subgroups, and there was overlap in the people, so they weren't mutually exclusive groups, and they correspond to the four sections that you see in the final Rules of Procedure. Within each of those sections, the process that was generally followed was essentially a wide-ranging and sometimes structured, sometimes unstructured discussion of the aspects that that group was responsible for. And that took, I don't know, a few months. And the calls at that point, I believe, were every 2 weeks in general. The process was interesting in that people started off, in some cases, with very diverse positions. And as we talked through the pros and cons of the various issues, there was an awful lot of closure and an awful lot of merger, not necessarily to any one person's position, but to some common point where everyone felt comfortable. The process then went into a drafting process within each of the four sections. And Cheryl noted this is version 64. That's version 64 of the consolidated document. Each of the four sections went through, I can't tell you how many different versions. In some cases it was only four or five, in other cases it was 20 or 30. Versions as we went through each particular section. And although we had reviewed all of the substantive issues in the first part of the process, we then, as things were drafted, went over them pretty well line by line. Obviously, in some sections there was less interest and it wasn't in any great detail. In other ones, it was in very great detail. And sometimes a good half hour to hour might have been spent on one paragraph. I think I can say with assurance, and if anyone who was involved in the process disagrees, wouldn't mind if they speak up, that on virtually every issue, even when there was significant disagreement to start with, everyone felt comfortable with what we ended up with. And I'm talking about not with the overall document, but on a line-by-line basis. So I'm comfortable that this does reflect at least the significant part of ALAC and at large that participated in the process. And certainly for people within any of the four working groups, there is virtual unanimity or close to it, that what we ended up, what we've ended up with is something that matches what people want to see out of the ALAC. The vast majority of the document, in fact, is a reorganization and reformulation of the original rules of procedure. There are differences, and I'll note some of them as we go along. Before I go into a quick bit of review, and I'm not going to try to take too much time, it's a long document, are there any particular questions about the process we went through before we look at specifics? Hearing no voices, seeing no hands raised, and we have a hand from Evan.
Hi there. Can everyone hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Alan, I was just wondering if, as you're going along, you could point out, you mentioned that there was a broad consensus met amongst everyone in the group. Are there any parts of the document where you couldn't get consensus and it was a preponderance of opinion, or would you say the entire document as it sits now has a very broad consensus from the group that was working on it?
I can say with some assurance that of each of the four sections were worked by different groups, and although there was overlap, there was a number of people, four or five of us, that were on all of the groups or participated in most meetings of all of the groups. So within each group, I'm not aware of anyone who said, I don't agree, but I'll grudgingly file a minority opinion. I think at pretty much every point we came down to something that people felt comfortable with. So I can say that with a pretty good sense of assurance. I can't think of a single thing where people ended up saying, I don't agree, but everyone else disagrees. You know, I certainly didn't. There are sections that if I had written it alone, I wouldn't have written that way. But I ended up feeling comfortable that what we have is something livable. So certainly in many cases, it's not what each individual would have written if they were on their own. But we ended up with something that everyone, I believe, felt comfortable with. We then went into a drafting, an overall document drafting process, and although the individual work groups have all seen it and there were no comments from them, the in-depth final review of these documents, and when I say in-depth, I mean word for word, was done by about a half a dozen people, which included the pen holders of the original sections, and those pen holders were Holly, Sala, and earlier in the process, me, Eduardo, Maureen Hilliard, Yuria, and Yalvi.
Yalvi.
Pardon me?
And Yalvi.
Yes, I did say that. Maybe it didn't come through. Plus Renalia and Tijani, who took part in, who sort of participated in the overall review. And at this point, there are no outstanding items that someone said, I don't want it, and I'm going to bring, you know. Along the way, we did have some where people said, I'm going to bring it up when it gets to the ALAC, because I really don't like that. But I believe we've eliminated all of those by changes to make people feel more comfortable. So at this point, I know of no one who is saying, I do not agree. No one who is an active member of any of the working groups or the review team. Tijani.
Thank you, Alan. Cheryl, I know you have already thanked Alan, but I have to repeat and repeat again that you have to thank me because of the huge amount of time and energy we put in this rule of procedure drafting. Thank you again, Alan. I'd like to say that it is sure that in most of the time we were all comfortable with the last decision you tried to make everyone comfortable with. But in some cases, it was not possible because the agreement was in the substance, not in the form. Not the, so you cannot conciliate between two opposite, I would not say opposite, but far ideas. So, but it is like this, huh? When I am the only one who doesn't like it, and the other members of the drafting team want it like this, it is like this, and that's all. So, but I don't know if we will discuss the document today or not. I have some points that are. Most of them are not
sorry
very
to
important, but some of them are important, and I think we need to mention them. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. Sorry,
Alan, it's Keith.
Yes, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt, but the interpreters were unable to hear what Tijani was saying. And
are we still here?
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
Yes, sorry, Alan. The interpreters are not able to interpret Tijani. So the Spanish channel will need a short summary, please. Thank you.
Tijani, let me. I had a great deal of difficulty hearing you also, but let me summarize what I think you said, and you can confirm if I have it right. You said that there were certainly points, and I don't disagree with this, where one person may have disagreed with all the rest on some point of substance, but ended up accepting it because they felt that was something they could live with, and there was a overwhelming consensus of the rest of the people that it should go forward like that. And I know you had a number of those points. I certainly had a number of those points. But I think they were all things that in the end people accepted as going as okay. However, I think you ended up saying, but you have a few points that you would like to have reviewed by the overall ALAC. I think that's what the way you ended, but I'm not sure. Is that correct?
Exactly. That's exact.
Okay. It would really be useful if you could put those in writing so we could, you know, we could see them and not just try to listen to you on the phone. So if it's something you can do and we can look at them during this call, that would be very useful. I would have hoped that we had had them going into this call.
Indeed.
Are there any other questions before we go through this then? No questions? Okay. If we, as we look at it, the introduction is just that, an introduction. The definitions and terms are important in that it has two functions. One is a convenient place to look back, and when there's an acronym that was defined somewhere else in the document and used later on, they are all collected in defined terms. So it's a quick place to come back when you find a set of initials you don't remember anymore, a quick place to go back to see what they are. There are also terms that are used, and an example is appointee, chair, consensus, motion, that are standard words in the language but have a very specific meaning within this document. They're all capitalized, and when you're reading the document, if you come to a capitalized term, that means it has a specific meaning, and you might want to refer to the defined terms to see what that is. The defined term meaning is always identified exactly when the first time it's mentioned in the document, but you can always refer back to the table. I'm not going to keep an eye on the screen, so if anyone puts a hand up, please, staff or Cheryl, just call out and let me call my attention to it, please.
Cheryl, do I look up Cheryl?
Tijani.
Thank you, Alan. So in the introduction, you introduce, there is the mention of individual and accredited organization. Here there is a big problem because there is only NARALO who has already individual as member. The URALO wants to introduce individual, but as an ALS for individual. So, and further, you explain how the organization are accredited and the individuals. How are they accredited? Are they accredited? So this is something that we don't want. I don't want it to be as vague as it is now. We need to make things very clear. Sure, we need to introduce the individuals inside the RALOs, but in which form? How? Right now, we don't have agreement about it. So as it is put here, it seems that any individual can be member of the RALO without any accreditation.
Oh, okay.
So this is a point that I want to clarify very, very well.
Which sentence are you talking about, Tijani?
1.1.
No, which sentence?
Moment, I will tell you.
Alan, sorry, it's Gisela again. Just to let you know that there's no Spanish interpretation at this stage with Tijani speaking. They are unable to hear him.
Thank you, Gisela.
Cheryl here.
Tijani
is at reference. We do also have a very significant echo back on the line, Gisela. I don't know whether Adigo could help you track that down. I mean, if it is Tijani's line while it's open, then that's not a problem. But if it's not, we should try and fix that. Thank you.
Okay, Tijani, may I suggest, Tijani was saying that there's a reference to individual users in Section 1, and it sounds like an individual user can be part of the at-large community without going through any process. Part of the problem may be that the first sentence, which says at-large is the home of individual internet users within ALAC, is not...
No, not this one. I will read you. The ALAC community within ICANN is made up of individuals and civic organizations.
Okay, and you're saying individuals should be modified to make it clear that a process must go through a process.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, fine, noted.
Cheryl,
you hear me better here?
Yeah, a little bit. Cheryl here. Alan, I would call on the ALAC to have extreme caution in modification of the sentence if they desire their rules to have some longevity, because it is a specific requirement of the last ALAC review that all of the regions find a way that individuals can be directly represented in their regional business. So what Tijani is saying is true. There is only the one region that has done that to date, but it is a mandate for all the regions to do so. So in modifying this sentence, please be very certain that you do not preempt or propose how each of the regions may approach this.
Noted, Cheryl.
It can be, I mean, it's all very good saying there has to be a process, but it may indeed be a RALO chooses to have no damn process at all. And that is also okay. Thank you.
Cheryl, I am not proposing to remove individuals. I am proposing to make it clear how the individuals can be part of the RALOs.
I will do so.
Okay.
Evan?
Thank you.
Cheryl here. Tijani, I understand that. I'm just saying how that happens will and should and can vary from RALO to RALO, so do not be limiting in what you change it to.
Evan?
Okay.
Thanks, Alan. Actually, I was going to speak. Cheryl said most of what I was going to say. I actually wanted to speak against making a significant modification to that line. It is within each railroad to determine how people are defined to be individuals participating in at large. So, frankly, I, you know, on one hand, yes to Johnny, it is vague. On the other hand, that's probably good because that enables the railroads to determine in each in their own way on how individuals can participate. Not every railroad is going to pick the same way to enfranchise and to individuals who are not part of ALSs. That's okay. I think being too constrained in what we're doing here puts a damper on that, and as Cheryl said, goes against an explicit mandate to incorporate individual users into the operation. Thank you.
Give me the ability to try to craft something, and if anyone objects, I'll be doing this very quickly. You'll have an opportunity to comment. May we go forward? Tijani, you still have your hand?
Can I?
A new hand?
Yes. The second point is in the table, in the defined terms. You define, for example, the consensus, which is more or less obvious. But you didn't define the supermajority, for example, which is not very well known by everyone. It doesn't mean the same thing for everyone. So everything that we put in the rule that is not well defined in the rule itself must be in this table as an acronym.
I have no problem with that. I wish you had made this comment earlier. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Alan. You're right, but you don't know in which situation I am. It's not a problem.
I appreciate that. Any... Tijani, is your hand still up?
No, I will remove it. Okay.
All right. Seeing no more hands, the next section defines the at-large advisory committee. As clearly as possible, much of it is a direct quotation out of the rules, out of the ICANN bylaws. It defines the goes on in section 3.5 to define the what we are now calling the ALAC leadership team, what used to be called the executive committee or the XCOM. The XCOM has not changed in substance from what it is right now, except it's better defined than it was before. It, again, still has no explicit powers in its own right. The chair does have a variety of explicit powers, and the chair may delegate those to the XCOM or to individual members. We are defining a new term in 3.8 called work teams. The work team is a generic term which may be a subcommittee, a standing committee, a working group, any of the various terms, and this is just something to group them all together so we can have one set of rules that apply to them. Section B is talking essentially about individuals who play roles within the ALAC or in conjunction with the ALAC. And it tries to group together what the requirements are for being, for filling one of these roles, and then the responsibilities that one has if you take on that role. Section 4 is ALAC members. Section 5 is the chair. And it there goes into a fair amount of detail there because the chair has a wide variety of obligations and responsibilities. Section 5.12 is something that was listed separately under, I think, code of conduct in the last rules, and it's actions that the chair can take in very extraordinary situations where there's, you know, some remedial action has to be taken because of what I'll generically call improper behavior. There are no new functions added here from what we had before, but they're
stated in a somewhat clearer way, and the exact process to be followed is a little bit clearer, because in some cases we're talking about things like mailing lists, which are in fact processes that are owned by ICANN, not the ALAC chair, and ICANN staff and legal and IT have potentially to get involved in some of those. There is 5.14, which is a succession process. That is, should the chair be unavailable and not have identified someone else to take his or her place, you know, whether it's sickness, family problems, being run over by a truck, none of which we wish on Olivier, but should any of these happen, there's a process by which we can make sure that there is continuity until such time as the ALAC can replace the chair, if that is indeed necessary, or until such time as the chair is back. And I see Olivier has a smiley face. We wish only the best for you, Olivier. There's a section about responsibilities of the ALAC leadership team, and I think the most important part is that we're expecting a significant increased workload over an out-normal ALAC member if someone is a member of the ALAC leadership team. We have three categories of ALAC leadership team members. There is the chair, one or two vice chairs, and whether there's one or two is up to each chair to decide how many vice chairs they want, he or she wants, and the other ALAC leadership team members who don't bear a specific title. And the workload is generally expected to be highest for the chair, next for the vice chair or chairs, and somewhat lower for the other members. And that's important, because when trying to convince people to take on these roles, you have to adjust the workload to some extent based on their particular circumstances. There is a section on appointees, and appointees may be someone who takes on the formal liaison role in cases where that title is used, or it could be someone who is appointed to some other group in a non-liaison role, that is, that term is not used. They are almost the same in many cases. We go into a fair amount of detail trying to put into words some very difficult concepts, and that is that the person needs to be, to the extent possible, representing the ALAC or speaking on behalf of the ALAC or understanding what the ALAC would do if the ALAC had an opportunity, to make a decision. In many cases in these roles, there is not an opportunity to go back to the ALAC at every moment, and in some cases there's confidentiality issues where you cannot go back at all. And there is a certain amount of care that must be taken in choosing people, and the rules try to flesh that out and try to set some guidelines for how that can be done. The terms are basically, that's section 8 now, all terms in general are 1 year. The chair, if you remember, under the ALAC review, was designed to be a two-year term now. We found a way to finesse it. I think it came from Tijani. Instead of having a different situation with a lot of exceptions, because you might appoint a chair to be there for 2 years, but they may not be available in the second year. They may not be on the ALAC even. So we found a way of doing it which worked out much better. That is, the chair serves for 1 year and is automatically renewed for a second year if certain situations are followed. If certain situations are still valid. Performance metrics and remediation. This is essentially saying that ALAC members have a certain ALAC members and appointees have a certain set of obligations that they have to follow. And if people are not meeting those obligations, if people are not contributing in a reasonable way, then there are a number of actions that the ALAC can take, going all the way through, in the extreme case,
to removal of an ALAC member or recall of a leadership team person, or recall of a chair, or removing the unappointing someone if they were appointed. And there is a reference to what we're calling adjunct documents. There are about four or five adjunct documents. These are documents which functionally form part of the rules of procedure, but are created separately and will give an opportunity to be able to be changed more easily as time goes on if changes are needed. Some of the adjunct documents are going to be needed immediately. Some of them, the wording allows them to be created at a later date. And in fact, the motion that will be put before the ALAC to adopt these will in fact be to adopt the rules of procedure once all of the necessary adjunct documents are available and approved by the ALAC. So all of these documents still have to be approved by the ALAC, but the order in which that is done may be different. And of course, the resolution will spell that out in more detail, saying which documents are still in process. Any questions before we go on to Section C? Seeing nothing.
Alan, there's been a couple of, Cheryl here, there's been a couple of points raised in chat.
Okay.
And I'm certainly doing my best to respond to them in the chat, but you might want towards the end to do a review. Thank you.
Do you want me to, do you want to raise the ones here that need discussion?
I just,
okay.
Yep.
No, I'm trying to keep my hands up, but I'm not looking at the chat at all. The next section, Section C, essentially is all about the processes that the ALAC uses to conduct its business. The first section, Section 10, talks about ALAC meetings, and although there are four kinds of meetings defined, to a large extent, they all devolve into regular meetings under some conditions. So you don't really need to worry about them. But the urgent meetings, special meetings, allow meetings to be called at short notice by the chair or by other people on the ALAC should they decide a meeting is necessary, even if the chair doesn't think one's necessary. So in general, we work on the assumption that our chair is doing a good job, but there are escape hatches if that turns out to not be the case. Section 10.3 talks about the various rules, and the ICANN bylaws overrule anything. The rules of procedure that we're talking about comes next. ALAC may make specific decisions which alter something in the rules or in the adjunct documents and so forth. We refer to the Roberts Rules of Order as a fallback should something become complex and we want to see how authorities look at it. I don't believe we've ever had to do this in the past, or maybe once or twice, and I don't expect it to happen very often in the future, but they are there so that we have a sequence of things that we can follow. We formalize the concept of agendas, which we've never done before, and say they are required for meetings, or at least preferably. The language we use tends to not be too rigid because we know that situations will occur where we're going to have to be flexible. Quorum is an issue that took an immense amount of discussion. The standard quorum, 50% of sitting ALAC members, is a simple one. And by the way, the expression sitting ALAC members is used when we want to make it really clear that we're not talking about the people in the room, but the people who are officially current members. The discussion centered around not that part of quorum, but the quorum associated with a vote. And we are introducing a new concept here that is, with a few unusual exceptions, for a vote to be considered valid,
it must have participation, votes cast, including abstentions, from all five, all regions that are represented in the ALAC. So if everyone from a specific region chooses not to participate, then in general a vote is not valid. But there are some exceptions, and it goes on to another rule that we'll talk about when we come to voting. Speaker rights are, that's 10.6, are basically what we have now. That is, meetings are open. We do our best to make sure that they're documented and transcripts and things like that. And that in general, ALAC members have speaking rights over others, but we try to make sure everyone can be heard. Motions are, there's nothing particularly unique about motions. The in our previous rules, we had something called motions and resolutions. No one ever knew what the difference was, but we had two different words. In this one, we only have one word. We've introduced the concept of a point of order. A point of order allows you to stop the meeting to fix something. It may be because rules aren't being followed. It may be because, you know, the projector isn't working. Or it may be because someone doesn't really know where we are in the agenda and they need clarification. Procedural motions are things that we rarely have in our meetings, but are necessary, you know, should we want to be more formal about it, or should someone believe that the meeting should be taking a different direction than it is right now. We talk about records of the meeting. This is section 10.10. Up until now, they were not mentioned. We are now essentially mandating that that we need some level of minutes or records of the meeting. We are not prescriptive as what they're called or exactly what they have in them, but we do have a minimum number of things that are in them, including a record of what decisions were taken, who participated in the vote, and the opportunity for people to insert into the notes a reason for why they may have voted, why they may have voted the way they did. And a relatively flexible but nevertheless important rule about that these meetings must be, the records must be available in a timely manner. Under Section 11, we're looking at decisions of the ALAC. We are revisiting a statement that has been in the ALAC rules since day one but has not been used rigorously, and that is try to make decisions by consensus instead of formal voting. The process is not very different in that in many cases you simply call for those who are abstaining or those who are voting no and the rest are voting yes. But we've assigned numbers to consensus right now, and we're essentially saying that for something to be deemed a consensus decision, at least 80% of those participating in the decision have to agree. So consensus is not just something which is less formal than voting, but more important, it indicates a stronger belief of the ALAC than voting does, because voting in most cases requires a 50% 50% of the ALAC, whereas consensus is a much stronger decision, and that's emphasized to some extent. A new innovation that we have now, which we've never done before, is for the situation where we have formal votes. Unless we are in an exceptional situation where the decision must be acted on immediately, and we do have occasional things like that when a statement must be submitted and we have a tight time deadline or something like that, but if we're not in that kind of situation, then any vote will stay open for a small number of days to allow ALAC members who may not be physically present on the teleconference or present in the room to participate. That essentially says that for any ALAC decision that is important, we can make sure that everyone has an opportunity, even if they're not on a teleconference, even if they were, you know, couldn't travel to the city where we're holding the meeting. And I think that's a very substantive difference, and hopefully will allow us to make sure that almost all votes or decisions of the ALAC have participation by virtually all ALAC members. There are a few cases where a formal vote must be taken, and they're decided, and they're mentioned there. There was a significant discussion over how to handle abstentions. The current rule allows, essentially subtracts out abstentions, and then looks at how people voted, and were there more yeses than noes, or whatever the question was. And there was a strong consensus that we keep that process. That we still allow abstentions not to count as noes. There are exceptions, and in some cases a vote requires an absolute majority or supermajority of the sitting ALAC. But in most cases, we still have the flexibility of allowing abstentions to be abstentions and not effectively no. The section that I added in a comment earlier this week, or last week, I guess, is part of this. The vast majority of formal votes at the ALAC require a simple majority of those voting, and a majority of those voting who didn't abstain. However, there are situations, and it was brought to mind by the process we just went through of deciding on objections for the new TLDs. And in something like that, you really don't want a vote to pass and be a decision of the ALAC without an overwhelming majority of the ALAC, or at least without a majority of the ALAC deciding on the issue. And therefore, I'm suggesting that we add an escape hatch which says the ALAC for a specific vote may require a higher threshold than is normally necessary. And that simply says that if we choose to do that in a particular case, it's because we're trying to emphasize that this is a decision which a significant number of ALAC members believe is the right way to go. Some of you may recall a decision the ALAC made a number of months ago on the on supporting the recommendation of the Red Cross IOC drafting team, where the decision was actually made because of the number of people who were on the call minus a significant number who chose to abstain. There were only about six or seven people, I think, who were participating in the vote, and it won, but it won by, I think, a 4-3 count, which said four people made a decision on behalf of the ALAC. And although that can, you know, that may be a reasonable way to go on some votes, there are others where we really do not want it to be that loose. Next substantive change we've made is introducing the concept of proxies. Proxies, like the concept of holding a vote over for several days, allows someone who knows they will not be at a meeting to cast a vote on either on anything that comes up at that meeting or on specific things that are known ahead of time. And they can give their vote to another ALAC member with a number of provisos, and they can either specify that the ALAC member vote in a specific way, or they can leave how the ALAC member votes to the discretion of that other person. But again, it's an opportunity for someone who cannot be at a meeting to make sure that their region is still represented in the decision process. One use of the proxy which did generate a lot of discussion is what happens if a person has a personal conflict and they feel they should not personally take part in the vote. And ultimately the group decided, with one or two people feeling a little uncomfortable with it, but not a lot, that they could give their proxy to another person who is not conflicted. And again, making sure that every region is equally represented in decisions of the ALAC, and a region shouldn't lose a vote because an individual happens to have a personal conflict. Now, I'll point out, in all of my history with the ALAC, I can only remember one case where that ever happened. So it's certainly not a common situation. How are we doing on time? The hour is just about up, and we're not quite finished yet, so I'll try to go a little bit further. Section 12 is amendment of the rules, and it basically follows the previous one that is saying a supermajority is needed, two-thirds of the ALAC. ALAC work methods, we're talking about email, wikis, any other technology that may come up. Now, although we mentioned some, there are provisions there that the ALAC can decide to use some new one. But we're very careful that we're not mandating specific technologies which may not work in some parts of the world. And we know we have to be very careful about that. The Code of Conduct is a pared-down version of what was in the original document. That is, we took out some of the very specific and directed statements, but left in the overall tone. 13.5 is a section of language, and it essentially puts into the rules what we are doing right now, and puts in and codes what came out of the ALAC review in terms of language requirements for the ALAC and for other appointees. Section 14 has an error in it. There's a hyperlink that isn't correct. That has to be fixed. Amazing, no one noticed it before. Section 14.
It was noticed, and I said it would be fixed.
But. Oh, okay. Well, I didn't notice it. No, none of the reviewers noticed it. That's a curious one in that we realized late in the process the bylaws say that the process for approving ALSs and decertifying ALSs is within our rules of procedure, and it never has been. It's always been another document that was not linked to the rules. This links it to the rules. But we're just satisfying the mandate. Section D is on selections, elections, and appointments. It tries to put in place a set of rules which, number one, satisfy the bylaws. So, for instance, the chair election has to be an election. It is more flexible on the other appointees and on the other positions, including the ALAC leadership team. And in general, in the past bunch of years, we've tended to have acclamations and not elections. But it does encode what has to be done if there is any contention for these things. And we have never had rules which explain how we make sure that the other four members of the ALAC leadership team do not come from the same region as the chair, because that is a regionally balanced group. And these sets of rules, in fact, do cover that. Don't think there's anything particularly controversial in selection of appointments. We do have provisions now that say the ALAC, if someone is in a position and they are still available and the ALAC is happy with them, the ALAC does not have to go out to a formal call. And that is effectively how we've done the things for a number of the positions before, and the ESAC position is specifically one of those that we have done that. And again, this puts into the rules the ability to do that should the ALAC choose. The procedures for making this selection for seat 15 are to a large extent unchanged from the previous set of rules, with a couple of exceptions. The largest single exception is there was an inconsistent set of rules about electors and who could be an elector. And the electors in this set of rules are the 15 ALAC members and the five chairs of the RALOs. But there were situations where if one of those electors was a candidate, they may or may not be able to vote for themselves, or they may or may not be able to be replaced by the RALO. And we now have a consistent set of rules which says in all cases a candidate cannot vote for themselves, but their region will still be fully represented. And the last change in there, I think, is one that says that RALO chairs may be directed by their RALO how to vote. And we put into the rule something which we had in the process last time, but it didn't make it into the rule of procedure, but it was something that was well understood, and that is the decision to direct a chair vote must be made by a formal decision of the RALO, and the direct how they to be voted should be made by a formal decision. In other words, it can't be made by two people in a back room and claim to be a RALO decision. Don't think there is anything else, and we have several sections on if we for some reason believe that some position that we have put someone in should be undone, that is, remove an ALAC appointment, remove an ALAC member, or remove a member of the ALAC leadership team, there are processes that to be followed. They are all very onerous. They require a significant majority of the ALAC to do in most cases. Not likely to ever be done, but it was felt that there should be rules in place. And that's the end of it. Cheryl, do you want to highlight any of the things that came up during the chat that you want me to address?
Cheryl here for the record. Yes, I would like to do that, but before that, if I could just get you to introduce to the ALAC the proposed 11.2.2.
I did.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear any discussion on that, my error.
When I was talking about 11.2, that section, I didn't read the text, sorry. But I did discuss that. That was when I discussed situations like the GTLD objection process, where we want to make sure that we have a larger vote. And the actual wording I have proposed is the ALAC may decide that for a specific vote, a different threshold be required for a vote to be successful, but in no cases shall the threshold be lower than the normal threshold specified in paragraph 11.2.1.
That's important for Cheryl here for the record for everyone to note that will be, assuming you all agree, a new inserted text into what you've got in front of you. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you.
There's been a couple of things discussed in the chat. I believe most of them have been dealt with. The one currently going on is the double A in AGM.
There was a belief in the work group that talked about meetings and administration that we needed a name for the ALAC meeting that is held during an AGM. That is, the ALAC meeting that is held in conjunction with the turnover in appointments. And the term AGM is a essentially a defined term in the bylaws, so we couldn't use that. And we played with a number of different variations of the ALAC AGM, which is what we ended up with, the annual ALAC general meeting, AAGM, and this is what we ended up with. What is the substance of the concern? Anyone? Is anyone still here?
Yes.
Evan, your hand is up. Would you like to speak?
Yes, thanks, because this is Evan for the record, and I was the person that first raised it in the chat. I think it's just a little confusing to a person that was going through it. There I was reading Section 16 and looking at this reference to the AAGM, mm-hmm. went back up to the definitions in Section 2, didn't find anything, and then had to go and dig deep into to before finding it defined in 10.2.2.
It's
so I'm going to suggest, perhaps, it's not in the defined... It is.
Yeah,
never mind. Sorry.
And at 10.2.2, where I think it's defined.
Sorry, I missed it. Okay. This cold is worse than I thought. Never mind.
Thank you. Anything else? Cheryl, anything else to summarize? It's a huge chat that I don't think I can scroll through easily. Can I get dialed back? Cheryl is not on. Is there anyone else who is watching the chat and thinks there's anything of merit that should be talked about? Olivier? Anybody? Staff?
Thanks very much, Alan. It's Olivier for the transcript. I've looked at the chat. No, there wasn't anything to do directly with the text on there. So, there was a note with regards to Robert's Rules of Procedure, but I guess we do have to have some fallback into a book that will be able to answer all the questions that we have.
Well,
so, ultimately, having had Robert's in many languages these days, I think that's a good fallback.
Yeah, my personal feeling is we could remove that line and no one would ever notice.
That's possible as well.
Sandra asked, who is Robert? Robert was an ex-colonel or something in the U.S. Army who decided to run for his local town council, if I remember correctly, and was amazed to find out that nobody knew the rules under which the council meeting was to be run. So he wrote some rules, and they have taken on a life of their own over the last 150 years or so. It's a set of rules that are used widely in English-speaking countries and through translation in a large number of other countries as well, and it was the only ones that we could find that had such universal, not universal usage, but wide usage, and in fact there were even some variations available in other languages. But from my personal point of view, we could have not included that, and I don't think we would have missed it. We did include it because the previous rules referred to the United Nations General Assembly rules as our fallback set of rules, and those applied even less. Anything else?
Cheryl here, Alan. Just
yep.
Letting you know I am finally back on the call. Sorry
okay,
about
good.
That.
Thank you. We just talked about Robert's rules. Sandra asked who was Robert, and
Okay. Yeah, no, I listened on the AC room, thankfully. But it was very annoying. It seems to be that exactly every 60 minutes after I've been dialed out to, it hangs up, which is an interesting concept of managing calls to Australia.
Olivier or Cheryl, are there any other items in the chat that we should be highlighting, or anyone else? Evan, your hand is still up, or a new
Alan,
hand?
This is Evan.
Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, that's a new one.
Go ahead.
Earlier on, it was there. Can you hear me?
Yes, you can.
Hello?
I can hear you, Evan.
There was mention made earlier on that the preference for decision-making is by consensus. I don't know if this is new or not. I don't recall it being in the previous version, but I want to thank you for putting it in there.
It was in the previous
version. I found has been very, very effective in trying to avoid confrontational votes when possible.
Yeah. Evan, it was in the previous version. It was not defined what it meant. And it has been studiously avoided, perhaps because it wasn't defined. But it was always there. We just didn't know what it meant.
hopefully now we'll know what it means.
Okay, thank you for doing this.
Can't claim that was mine, but you're welcome. Anyone else?
Cheryl here.
Yes.
Cheryl here, Alan. I'm pretty happy with what's happened in chat. I think we've probably kept, we just need to make sure we go through, we capture that, which I know staff do capture it for us, and any particular edit points, such as the noting of the broken link, etc., we double-check on. I just wondered if Tijani has been dialed back to whether I would very much like to tidy up and complete any other points that he might wish to raise. So if Tijani's been dialed back to, I wondered if he had any specific text points he wanted to raise beyond those that he did earlier on in the call.
Yeah, I noticed Wolf has something about point 18, but I don't know what the substance is, so perhaps we can also have him.
Cheryl here, I'll deal with Wolf, and there is nothing wrong with a little onslaught from time to time. But we probably won't be polluting things with smoke. Thank you for that observation.
Thank you. Go ahead, Tijani.
Point 18.
Yes, Cheryl and Alan, I have a lot of points to raise, but I will send an email because I am mistaken. I didn't discuss those points before because I have special conditions, personal conditions. I have a lot of problems this time. That's why I am really late in everything. So
Tijani,
I will send
Tijani,
an email.
If I may, I would actually like to offer you the time to raise the most important or as many of those points as you can now, because this is the one opportunity you have for the whole of the ALAC to make opinion and react to those points. It would be a valuable use of your time and ours if we did that now.
Yes, if you want, we can go to the 5.6. And in this paragraph, you said that when the chair wants to delegate to someone else to chair a meeting, the delegated chair has all the rights of the for managing the meeting, except those that are specifically designed for the chair. And this is not a good formulation because for managing a meeting there is nothing which is specifically designed for the person of the chair. So it is a confusion without any result. I have checked all the responsibilities of the chair, and I didn't find one which is restricted to the chair as a person for managing a meeting.
I will point you to one that I'm aware of. There may be others. The one that I'm aware of is, and let me take me a moment to find it.
While Alan is finding that, this is Cheryl Tijani. For example, the matters that would be to do with a discipline, etc. Those points where we specifically task the chair with having an intervention with a recalcitrant, that's the sort of thing that would not be transferred over to a lowercase chair of a meeting.
Stays
with the capital C chair of the ALAC.
Yeah, the specific one, Tijani, that was added for, although there may be other ones also, I don't remember offhand, is 11.2.3.4. And that is a situation where if a vote is taken and it is a tie, one of the actions that the chair can take, but only the ALAC chair, is to cast an additional vote to break the tie.
Yeah.
That was given to the ALAC chair because the ALAC chair was elected by the ALAC for that role, and it was believed by the working group that came up with this that someone who is sitting in for the chair on an interim basis, which could be any ALAC member, should not be given the ability to break a tie by casting a second vote.
themselves.
Okay.
That was an example.
So in this case, I suggest to add only at the end of the paragraph, because the meaning is a little bit confusing. So if you add only, it will be more clear that there is restriction for some things for the ALAC chair only.
Okay, which section was that?
Yeah, 5.6.
I will take a look at that and see if I can fix the word.
Okay. There is in paragraph 5.12.4. There is yes. You spoke about action that violates the code of conduct, and I have seen the code of conduct. It is a paragraph in this rule of procedure. So perhaps we have to mention the number of the rule of the reference number. Pardon?
You're right. There should have been a paragraph pointer there.
Yeah. Because when you speak about a code of conduct, everyone will think about a document, another document.
Yeah.
And in fact, it is not.
Madam Chair, yes, we agree.
You'll notice in 5.12.1 it does have the paragraph number. It just got omitted from this one.
Okay, that's good. Yes, 5.13. I don't think that this paragraph should be there, and yet it is repeated in 9.8. So I prefer it in 9.8 and not repeated. We can mention we can make a mention of paragraph 9.8, but not repeat the same paragraph in both places.
Tijani, let me explain to you and to all how that came about. Originally, 9.8 had the full description of the ombudsman, and because this section, 5.12, was talking about actions of the chair which someone might complain about, they wanted a pointer to 9.8. We had that. When we had legal review, we were advised that we should not use anything to describe the ombudsman other than the formal bylaw definition of what the ombudsman does. And therefore, we ended up with two versions of it. I have no problem taking out one of them. So
yeah,
it is in
9.8. Cheryl
here,
Alan. Yep. Cheryl here, Alan. I also have no problem leaving them both in. Because they do actually serve slightly different purposes.
May we have this discussion on email or in the wiki? I can go either way. You want it out. Cheryl wants it in. I don't really care. Let's decide, but let's not waste time on this call about it. If you have suggested wording for this one where you think it can point to another one, then please, again, propose it.
Yes. Next point is 5.14, and in this paragraph we speak about in case of the chair is not able to carry out the duty obligation of the office, including the delegating responsibility to another member. Another ALAC member will be deemed to be the chair. Who will decide this another member?
The process below decides it.
That's what Tijani Sheriff said. That is what the rest of the rule through 14.1.2 to 14.4 describes.
Yeah,
okay.
It's deemed because it's not an election, and remember, the chair has to be elected. So here we have a situation where we can't elect it, so the word deemed covers that.
Okay, but I have a big concern about 5.14.4, because you say that if there is no agreement in the other cases, the last case, the last case is members of the ALAC can be the chair. And if there is not agreement, if there is several candidates, there will be a random selection. And
correct.
I don't agree with that, because we may have a member of ALAC who never attend, who never work, who is not aware of the things, and who is a candidate to be chair And if it is a random selection, he can be selected.
Then you,
sorry,
you need...
Sorry, Susanna, Cheryl here.
Okay.
They would have to have been put forward. They would have to have been nominated. Another ALAC member would have had to have either nominated them for the position or supported their nomination for the position, which does make your scenario extremely unlikely. 5.14.4 goes to when more than one person, in other words, we do not have by mutual agreement, is standing for this deemed role, and in which case we simply randomly select out of those that are duly nominated, or put forward, I should say.
Cheryl, in fact, there is no nomination process. If we wanted, I can put it in.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we believe there needs to be a nomination process for that, then I would suggest... And I would suggest that any ALAC member to be eligible has to have some support, and I'll try to come up with some words for that.
Exactly, exactly.
Thanks, Cheryl, dear Alan. If you can use terms like propose as opposed to nominate, that would be better. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I
thank you, Bijani. Your next point?
I will stop here, and perhaps I will read more. I didn't have time to read everything, but... those are only the first things I kept from the text, and I will read more, and we'll send an email very soon.
Please, and perhaps we can have a one-on-one Skype chat or several of us to try to resolve them, because we really need to get this approved, and you know the timing is tight on this point.
I understand. I apologize.
Okay.
Thank you for that, and might I suggest to the ALAC that unless Alan and Tijani agree that such text issues raised by Tijani into his mail to the working list and hopefully also put on the wiki, but if he doesn't have time to do that, perhaps staff could ensure that it gets copied to the wiki, that unless they deem it substantial, they simply sort the damn thing out. And either agree or otherwise to make the change. This is far, far too late in the game for what is really decorative discussions to go on. If they are substantive discussions, if they are significant omissions or errors, then yes, by all means, Alan needs to catch them and needs to make the changes in the text. But I would caution you all, ALAC, not to try and make the perfect here. You have what is an exceptionally good document. Yes, there may be some minor imperfections. You will and should be able to review and polish those out in a simpler process in the not too distant future. Do not, please, I implore of you, hold up for any length of time over more than 36 to 48 hours you're moving on to the next steps, and it is, in fact, those next steps that Olivier on the agenda will be looking at in a moment. Just before we do go to that part of the agenda, I think it is appropriate for us to ask, is there any other questions or comments to come in from, first of all, ALAC members, and failing ALAC members, than any member of the community on this call.
Cheryl, before we
now,
do
Alan,
that... Yeah, before we do that, a couple of quick comments. I have asked that a small amount of time be allocated in the next ALAC meeting should there be any last-minute things that we need discussion. But clearly our ALAC meetings are already all overloaded, and we don't want to do anything substantive in that case. And I'll reiterate something you said, but I'll say it in different words. These rules of procedure are pretty clean. There are no doubt things that we have forgotten or gotten wrong. And hopefully they're clean enough, unlike the last set, that if the ALAC a month later decides we really need to change a few things to clean it up, it's not going to be something we have to put off for 5 years like we did this time. Changes to these, like changes to the ICANN bylaws, can be made on a regular basis when we have some need, even if it's a small need. So with that in mind, yes, anyone else with any comments?
Thank you very much, Alan. Cheryl here for the record. And yes, I think it is important that this major overhaul has set the ALAC up for more easily reviewed and certainly redressable rules of procedure. Opening the floor, first of all, to any ALAC member and then to any member of the community who wishes to ask a question or a point.
While we're waiting for hands, I'll point out that although Tijani is very late with these comments, Tijani has been one of our more diligent workers working on all four review teams, I believe, and has done an awful lot of commenting until recently he's been sidetracked. So,
absolutely,
Tijani,
Cheryl,
I thank you
the
for
record.
That.
This is in no way a criticism of the contribution made of anyone. It is simply a drawing up line in the sand.
No hands up?
Do we have any hands in the room? Because I'm unable to see them. If you are able to raise your hand in the next room and you're on the Adigo Bridge, please make yourself known. I'm hearing nothing and seeing nothing, in which case we will move to the next section of the agenda, which is over to you, Olivier, with our next step.
Thank you very much, Cheryl, and it's Olivier for the transcript record. So we've now reached the next step phase, which effectively is going to be, as Cheryl mentioned earlier, a short period for more comments in writing as soon as possible to Alan, to Cheryl, thinking about rewriting the whole thing from the
Olivier,
draft,
to the wiki.
Yeah.
To the wiki, everyone should
the
see
wiki.
Them. No private,
okay,
no
so
private
to,
conversations if
so
we can
to
avoid
the wiki.
Them.
And all right then, thank you very much, Alan. And if somebody could actually put the wiki location on the chat so that all of the people who are here don't need to scramble for it, that would be really helpful. And so, with all those in the wiki, Alan, how many days did we say? 48 hours, 3 days.
Our meeting where we want the ALAC meeting is next Tuesday, and we want to start the vote immediately after that. So within the next day or two,
within the next day or two. Okay, Alan. So within the next couple of days.
36 to 48, no long.
Okay, thank you, Cheryl. So that we have, Alan will have plenty of time then to do the edits and to present this over to the ALAC meeting next week.
To do the edits and if there's disagreement to resolve the disagreement.
Okay, well, that's up to you at that point. And then I believe that, so the ALAC meeting will take place next week. What I suggest then after that is to launch an ALAC vote to ratify these rules of procedures immediately after the ALAC meeting next week, which will therefore not require everyone to be on the call. And on top of that, it will make sure that everyone has had a look at them, at the rules of procedures, rather than having a vote done there and then. Furthermore, of course, as we know, votes on the ALAC call are usually very time-consuming. And if you turn over to the agenda of that talk, you'll notice it will be a very full agenda, as usual. So that's the next step. Are there any questions or comments?
Alan?
Yes?
Alan? The link you put is the link for the meeting of today.
And that is where
so
we ask for... And that is where we ask
Thank
for comments.
Thank you, Tijani. Cheryl here. That is the place to put the comments. That is the correct
okay.
link. All comments
okay.
on the text go to that page and no other.
Okay.
Okay. Olivier, if I may steal your meeting back from you, are you completed with your next steps now?
Cheryl, I just want to ask especially to the ALAC list with that link as well so people have not been able to attend this call.
Olivia, I have not a clue what you just said.
Yes, unfortunately you sound like Stephen Hawking, so perhaps you could repeat that. This is Cheryl.
This is terrible. Can you hear me?
Yes, now we can.
Yes.
Okay, so as I was saying, I would like staff to send a copy of that link over to the ALAC list so that everyone is aware that comments should only go on the wiki on that page, because the last thing we want is for comments to go in other places and to be lost or forgotten, and for people to turn up at the call next week to say, oh, I put my comments, but I didn't put it on that page. So let's make sure everyone on the ALAC is aware. That's all.
Olivier, as a means of explanation, we had said the comments should be made before today, so that today's agenda page was the right place to put them. Since we are extending, however, we don't want to move to a second page and have two different places. That's why we're keeping today's agenda page.
Thank you very much. I'm aware that we only had 3 minutes over our time, but that is as much time as we could and should take of our interpreters for this call. I would like to specifically thank Veronica, David, Claire and Camilla for their work on today's call. Note that the recordings of these calls will be available in a short order, as will some transcripts as soon as possible, and this will allow all of the ALAC and indeed the community to avail themselves of information in the languages of English, Espanol and French. To that end, I would suggest that, Olivier, that if you will allow me to close this meeting, I would with great pleasure thank each and every one of you both on this call and for those who've contributed what can only be described as a heroic and, I believe, highly successful effort in a major overhaul of the At-Large Advisory Committee rules of procedure. Thank you one and all. Thank you, staff. And as with this call is ended. Bye for now.
Thank you all.
Bye.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Alan. Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Well done. Good work. Bye-bye.
The meeting has been adjourned and the audio will now be disconnected. Thank you all for joining.